This is a podcast about music, if you really love music.
Let's begin.
Welcome to In a State.
I'm in a state. I'm in a state. I'm in a state. Oh, yeah.
I'm Porter Block, singer-songwriter from New York City. But for the purposes of this show and above all else, I am a geeked out lover and fanatic about music. I don't love it all, but all of it can be beautiful, ambiguous, elusive, special. It's music, goddammit. On this show, we'll talk to the artists who create it, perform it, record it, technicians who use ancient practice and modern technology to make it all happen, and the entrepreneurs, the tastemakers, promoters, entertainment executives who, in the end, praise it and value it and curate the cultural landscape that is America 2017. Aging baby boomers, Gen X slackers, clueless millennials, this show is for you.
I'm in a state, I'm in a state, I'm in a state, oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
This is Porter Block. I'm in Williamsburg, Brooklyn, talking to Andrew Horowitz, composer, band member, solo artist, and producer. He started with the band Tally Hall. Went on to record under the moniker E-Do as a solo artist and composed music for piano and voice. Andrew's classically trained in both music and literature, and his piano music could sound more like Eric Satie or Darius Milhaud as much as Leon Russell or Elton John.
You've won a lot of awards along the way, and I want to talk about that. But let's start at the beginning. You're a classically trained pianist?
Correct. I am a classically trained pianist. I can no longer play classically trained piano, but I was brought up basically playing piano and writing classical music and jazz music all the way through college. I went to school for classical composition at the University of Michigan. Somewhere along the way, I went into rock music. I think when I was working in classical music, I generally tend to see what everyone else is doing, and then I do the opposite. And it's not because I want to be different, it's just I don't want to be the same. So I always gravitated towards rock music growing up, even when I was studying classical music. I was into the Stones and Beatles and Crosby, Stills, Nash and all that classic rock, and also what was on the radio.
As a classically trained musician, Andrew can work within the rigid structural boundaries of classical forms like piano etudes. Piano etudes made famous by Frédéric Chopin are exercises or exploration in piano technique. Andrew composed a set, and you can see them on his website.
I think I wrote a lot of etudes in particular because my attention span was short. Etudes are exercises for instrumentalists, and I always approached an audience, and especially in a concert hall when they're captive, they have to listen to your music. I always wrote for them. I never enjoyed particularly listening to a 10-minute piano piece by some new composer. I personally could listen to 1 minute of some just idea. I still write them once in a while. There's no particular aim for them, or they're more for me and saying, okay, I have this idea. It's instrumental, and I would say, like, if you're exploring arpeggios or the idea arpeggios, you write something like Coldplay. They're experts at that. Or if I was going something more fugal and quick, I'd explore Bach and what he did in that context. I just enjoyed that writing process. I enjoyed picking up a pencil and 2 hours later having a new piece or at least the bones of a piece.
Let's get back to the podcast.
Tally Hall, which was a band put together at the University of Michigan. Talk about how that all came together.
I wound up forming this band. My sophomore year of school, I was introduced to Rob Kanner, who is a talented singer-songwriter. We became fast friends and started writing together. From there, we just developed a group of friends that liked to play music. Before we knew it, we had a band and were being invited to play frat parties. The frat parties kind of became a way for us to develop ourselves and learn covers and become tighter as a unit. And then we started writing original material, and I just think we had the right group of people and a smart group of people. We decided early on not to follow any trends. I was the only music major in the band, and I think because of that, there were no rules with songwriting or no expectations. We just wrote what we wanted.
Marvin's Marvelous Mechanical Museum, which is, was that the first record?
That's the first record. We didn't write to make a record. We wrote a bunch of songs, and we originally had a record. The first time we committed, I guess, to a recording, we were working in, I think it was Final Cut Pro, which is a film editing program, because Joe is a film major, and that's all he knew how to use. None of us had Logic. None of us knew what Pro Tools was.
And then you re-recorded it, right?
We did, and it wasn't on purpose, actually, because we never expected anyone to care. By the time we graduated college, I think the next day we signed a record deal with Quack Media and our friend Al. And from there, we were like, let's go back and record all these songs. And Joe was like, oh, actually, I erased all the recordings. I didn't think we'd ever need them again. And these days, it's silly because you have a hard drive and it costs $50 to save stuff, but he didn't think twice about that. So we went in the studio and Al gave us 2 weeks to record a record, and we spent 3 months on it. We recorded the record and Marvin's came out of that, and it was a magical time where we were able to lock ourselves in. I knew all these music school graduates, and we just pulled in everybody we knew, and it didn't matter what it costs or whatever, we just made it work.
Tally Hall went on to produce albums like Marvin's Marvelous Mechanical Museum, Good and Evil, and an internet TV show, which had a lot of influence at the time. Marvin's Marvelous Mechanical Museum is almost childish in a way, a nostalgic American Gothic view of games. From the get-go, the band used visual imagery quite effectively.
Can I get a tea? And if you hit me with the A-L-L-Y, then you'd see why the hall is here for y'all. Well, the mini mall is calling us all in. So
kids, the visuals were a big part from day one, and it was never, in the eyes of, I think, Joe, who was the primary filmmaker, it was never a band, it was a collective of artists. He had this film group that, so basically in college we had like 9 of us living in the same house. 4 of them were film majors and the rest of us were in the band. Joe, basically, like, he did this music video for Banana Man for a school project, and it went viral before viral was viral. And from there, I think because also with his film group, he had all these short skits. The skits started being associated with the band because we were in the skits. And
the opening track won an award, didn't it? Or did
the, Good was Day?
Good Day won the John Lennon
scholarship award. That was a fluke. I submitted to that without ever thinking I'd hear back. And I won for Good Day, and it kind of validated our band at that point. So we're like, we're writing these weird, quirky songs, and someone cares.
After Tally Hall, Andrew went on to record under the moniker E-Do, and his solo recordings are quite different than the band work. Use of percussion is quite innovative, and his piano music sounds positively mysterious.
So the band was no longer a full-time job in 2011 due to unforeseen circumstances. I just needed to create music, and so I said, well, I'll just do it. So I started writing the songs for that record, and I had a few from Tally Hall that were just sitting on my computer. I think that record helped me learn how to be a producer, because all I had was a laptop and keyboard, and I was on my own. So I guess over the course of a year, I put that record together. I guess I've always approached production. I've never had a formal production training. It's just come up with an idea and execute and figure out how to execute it.
After having a successful band and solo career, he took an apprenticeship with producer Dave Tozer and worked for years on what eventually became Love in the Future, the multi-platinum John Legend record.
I had spent so much time on Tally Hall and so much energy in Tally Hall, and every day waking the bands. Everything I did was for the band, and touring for all these years with the same people. And when that was taken out from under me, was in New York and I was lost. So I was making that solo record, and I happened to be introduced to a 17-year-old kid that was a big Tally Hall fan. And he had seen us on Fearless Music, which was a late night television show on Fox. He had just started working with the producer named Dave Tozer, who was just starting up with John Legend's new album. My friend brought me into that situation, and I basically over time made myself necessary for that record. Every time he called it, 2 a.m. He would call me at crazy hours, and I would be there within a half hour. I would find a way to get there. If I was in the middle of dinner, I'd say, I gotta go to the studio. I had a meeting with someone around the time, and I said, I shouldn't be here, because he asked me to do some strings for one of the Legend tunes. And I was like, I'm not the right person for this. I've never done this. My friend said that none of us know what we're doing. Just do it, because someone else who doesn't know what they're doing is gonna do it instead. That was great advice, because over time I got more comfortable with that. Two intense years of working on that record, and we wrote and produced maybe twice as many songs, three times as many songs as actually made the record. And some of them are great, and some of them are full productions that could be released tomorrow if John Legend wanted to do that. I apprenticed for Dave for 4 years, so I took in as much as I could in the engineering side. I never had a formal engineering training.
Were you working on a big SSL, or was everything just
Pro Tools? No, everything in the box, everything Logic all the time. And I liked it that way. There's too much gear when I go in a studio, and I at first saw, you know, they have 50 compressors and all these expensive microphones. It was so intimidating. Over time, Dave helped me to focus and understand piece by piece, and I educate myself on YouTube. At a certain point, I started taking on my own clients. I was like, I want to do my own music. I don't know how people find me. I don't know where my work comes from, but I don't get a lot of calls from A&R, and I don't take a lot of label meetings. Most of my work is from other producers and musicians who recommend me or want to work with me.
So it's not driven by a publishing deal?
No, I've never signed a publishing deal.
Incessant co-writing, which is sometimes a great thing, a collaborative thing to constantly
definitely
keep your skills set up.
And I do a lot of co-writing too, but it's rarely from a publisher or a label. It's generally from another writer or producer that brings me into the session.
In a state.
So how do you deal with both the musical training and your sense of writing and literature and history, and then meld that into something that's accessible?
I never think about music theory or literature when I'm writing. I just never think about it. And I'll have some songwriters come in and say, well, let's go to the 1-5 and then let's do the minor 3. And it takes me a second to wrap my head around that, even though it's ABCs for me. I don't know. I think you gather all these tools, and then they come out when you need it. It's like speaking English. You have this huge vocabulary, and once in a while you need that word. So I work with a lot of young artists, and when they'll come to me generally having some sort of talent or some sort of sound or something to say, but they don't necessarily know how to say it. My job is always to figure out the best way to present their music. I'll spend a lot of time talking to people, and I try not to write lyrics and put words into their mouth. If that needs to happen, then I'm there. And I these days actually have a couple of really great collaborators who are incredible lyricists. If they're feeling the material, and I'll sit in the back of the room and say nothing unless I have a specific. I'd rather let the art be created, and I don't like inserting myself into the music. I inevitably do, but I try not to.
Presently, are you listening to music, and how do you listen? Do you listen to the radio?
Not as much as I'd like to. It's never like an album or something. It's always Spotify, a new music Friday, or the last album I listened to, I listened to half of a Lord album. I got distracted, but I'll go back to it. I just want to know what other people are doing, because I feel like there's a lot to learn, and I learn by listening to other people's decisions. I think it's really hard to live in a bubble.
You've got an incredible background of training, but need to work in essentially the pop milieu. How do you make that work? Is that fulfilling to you?
If I'm working with, and I recently worked with a 17-year-old pop singer, I will analyze that and say, this is what we're trying to get to with this person, because this person is trying to have a hit, me being weird with them. And I was weird. We did a cover of Ultra Rocks Vienna, which was an incredibly strange tune for a 17-year-old to sing, but it came out really well, and it was natural, and we wanted to experiment with her. Worked for a long time now with a rapper named and songwriter named Jadena. He's about to go on tour with his first record, which came out a couple months ago. And I have a couple other artists of stature that I can't really talk about, but I do work for them. Most of my time is spent on artist development. So I have this French singer named Livia Blanc. We are creating classic 60s French music.
Right.
Yeah, which I love. Right. And I never thought I'd do, but it was a challenge. And she's an incredible vocalist and personality, and seemed interesting. So I took that on with a friend of mine.
Concentrating on the music part of it, or are you putting management and label in the business
terrible businessman. I'll say that. Basically, the idea right now is to find these young talents that need help or that I can help. Spend a year or two developing them, writing the tunes, doing the production, sending them the right producers and other writers, releasing the material via DistroKid. You know, you don't need a label for any of that. Building the brand up. And then the goal is always to pass them off to other people that can help them more than I can. In theory, that's what would happen. In practice, it's always a little messier than that.
In a state.
In a relatively short period of time, Andrew's become an important force in the New York music scene.
A common thread in A&R meetings and publishing meetings is that everyone's going to LA because their music's too hard in New York and it's not really happening. It is really much harder in New York, I think, because it's so expensive these days and there's not much of a central community. There are a lot of talented people and I think it's starting to, the tides are turning. I know a handful of producer friends that are doing this exact sort of artist development and we're not trying to pump out these pop hits. We're finding people that we find interesting and having a little bit of success with it along the way. I think one of my friends started off, found Verite, who didn't sign to a major label, and she's that artist she's incredibly successful now, and like a Lindsay Stirling or something, she can tour and she'll have fans in each city. We have a monthly concert now where it's more like a social gathering for everybody to come together and get out of their cocoons and meet each other. We called it the New York Imagination Society, and the first thing we're doing is this monthly concert series. So we'll have 10 artists perform one cover tune apiece, house band of touring musicians. A lot of musicians, producers, and writers are coming out, and a lot of introductions are being made. And these artists, it's not a showcase, but it is, in a sense, a way for everybody to meet new artists on the scene.
Andrew is so understated about his incredible background, his training, his award-winning work, his constantly moving forward and writing, producing, arranging, and developing artists bit by bit, and then passing them on to someone else who can help them further. He's truly lent himself, put himself in service to the people who he works for, and that's probably one of the reasons why he's as successful as he's been. I want to thank Andrew Horowitz for coming to In a State. If you get a chance, listen to Tally Hall and check out his solo stuff, Edu, that's spelled E-D-U. This is Porter Block, broadcasting from Williamsburg, Brooklyn, New York City. You can listen to my stuff on iTunes and at www.teammensch.com. Porter Block, In a State.